The brand is the product. The brand is the most important thing. It is a trusted platform. As soon as someone comes in, they are outsourcing their trust to us. We've done the hard work and the heavy lifting and all of the deep, deep intentionality around safety and purity. They will come and they will shop and they will buy everything from that beautifully designed diaper to that laundry detergent, to that spray cleaner, to that personal care and lotions and balms and everything you would put on your baby.
Welcome to the Brands for a Better World podcast, the podcast that brings you the stories behind people and products building a more just, healthy, and regenerative future for us all. Tune in weekly, and together, we'll learn why these better products and brands were created, how they're helping fix broken systems, and what you can do to support them. My hope is that you'll discover some new brands to love and get some sparks of inspiration that will help you live your best life. Hi, I'm your host, Gage Mitchell, founder of Modern Species, a sustainable brand design agency helping better brands grow to scale their impact. This podcast is one way we do that. If you like the show, please help it grow by leaving ratings and reviews on your podcast app and by sharing your favorite episodes with your friends. Maybe this will be one of them. On this episode, I'm speaking with Christopher Gavigan, co-founder of The Honest Company, about where his passion for family health first came from, how he and actress Jessica Alba came together to launch The Honest Company, what drove him to launch his new and recently acquired brand, Prima, and what he looks for when launching or investing in brands to ensure their success. Then we wrap up with a rapid round question segment. Enjoy.
Hi, my name is Christopher Gavigan, and thanks for having me on today. I am the co-founder of The Honest Company, as well as Prima. And I've spent a lot of my life building and architecting better for you brands. I don't like to say better for you because I feel like that takes out a whole segment of work that should be done on behalf of the planet as well. So it's really better for you and better for planet. And I'm really excited to talk to you guys today.
Yeah, I love that note too. That's part of why we're called Brands for a Better World, is because it's like, well, yeah, they're better for you, but they're also good for the planet and they're good for, you know, let's just say animals or culture or society, whatever. So it's hard to put one word on it, but
yeah,
you know,
I love how the world really embraces the interconnectedness of us all, right? And so ultimately, we are inextricably linked. And so brands must work on behalf of planetary and human platforms and choices, and we must be activated to do something. So I appreciate
right.
you guys.
Yeah. Embracing. I mean, even if we're trying to be, for lack of a better word, selfish and do something that is better for us, well, taking care of the planet is also better for us. Taking care of animals and culture and everything else is ultimately also better for us, right? Because we thrive when the whole system is working, not just when one piece of the system is working and everything else is broken. Right. So, you know, there's so much to talk to you about. I'm excited to have this conversation. And I know that there's so much to talk to you about that there's no way we'll cover it all. But I do want to dig back in to kind of your history, how you got to where you are now first, to just set some context. And when I was doing some research, I noticed that it seemed like this journey that you're on now around kind of health and wellness, especially around the family and child health, started back around 2002 when you launched Family First Inc. and then Healthy Child, Healthy World in 2003. So I'm curious, how did you get on this track of family and children's health?
Well, I'm one of four boys, and so Irish, Italian, Catholic family on the East Coast. And so family in any of those cultural groups is quite important. And so I grew up in a world where family was always the priority. We always stayed together. We always prioritized each other. Whilst, trust me, there was a ton of discord and, you know, you have four boys in a home, it gets pretty rowdy. We really were, you know, I will give my parents a ton of credit that we really were led to help and support and guide each other and prioritize that relationship. So family was always there. But what I wanted to do, and I realized this early in my life, and there was not as many watershed moments as there was a percolation of understanding, particularly around my engagement and my love and my adoration and my my actualization coming really to its fullest of potential when I was outdoors, when I was engaged in some type of natural setting. And we happened to live in coastal Connecticut, so we were very much engaged in a really beautiful environment, East Coast, and had a lot of access to all things natural and environmental terrains and you know, ecological spaces that really were inspiring and beautiful. And so that filled me up. And without overthinking it, I always was led by that desire and need to be part of the natural world and to support it. And it wasn't until, so I took my passion and my interest and I went to Santa Barbara. So I went to the University of California, Santa Barbara, and jumped in, you know, headfirst into their ecological sciences and environmental sciences platform, which was really the first in the nation. And it started in 1969 and 70 and was a outbirth of a tragic event on the shores of Santa Barbara, where there was an oil spill off the coast of Santa Barbara. And so you had a multidisciplinary academic setting come together and say, we must all come together. So social sciences and health sciences and physical sciences, engineering teams, chemistry, all of the world of that school came together and said, we're going to create a multidisciplinary platform and program, particularly around environmental sciences. And so me arriving there in the early 90s was a really special opportunity for me. And that's where I parlayed all of that educational insight and my excitement for family and educating and communicating and articulating what it means to be a holistic human, as well as a person part of a community. And every chance I got, I tried to bring those things together in a meaningful way. And it wasn't until, along that journey, I worked with quite a few educators and science leaders, but I always thought it was special to bring together the world of science and content in a way that was palatable and easy to understand, and that it didn't feel other. It felt native and natural and clear. And so Family First was a decision where I stepped into my first part of my entrepreneurial journey. I started another brand called Pinnacle Expeditions that was bringing 15-year-olds into the natural environment and bringing leadership as well as science involved. And then I happened to connect with the founders of Healthy Child, Healthy World. At that time, it was called Children's Health Environmental Coalition. And I decided that it needed a new brand and a new face and a new vision. So we worked together hand in hand with the founders to really create one of the most important platforms to really start the natural parenting movement and to help educate and inspire families to what does it mean to be empowered with information, but what does it also mean to take direct action on certain toxicants or certain chemicals that might be in our everyday world, and then how do we help both avoid them, but also how do we have the healthiest, happiest child and family? And so that was a really important part of my journey here.
It's really interesting that it seems like you have this natural instinct. You were calling it before in your intro of being kind of a brand architect, but you have this natural instinct to approach problems, not just from a, we've got this solution, we've got this information that needs to go out there, but we need to find the right way to package this information and explain it and brand it and pull it all together in a way that's going to actually connect with people. Where did that kind of instinct come from? Was that part of your program at Santa Barbara, or was that something you had in you from the beginning and it just kind of came out over time?
I think a little bit of both. It was certainly, there was an entrepreneurial and business ethos and a ask for us as we departed the halls of Santa Barbara to do something, to really create and to administer and deliver the information in an inspiring, empowering way. And I do believe it's equal parts, you know, it's finding, you know, as a creator and as a curious artist, how do we bring together what's beautiful and what's sacred and what's science driven and what's thoughtful? And sometimes you've got to, it's the art and science of it all. And sometimes you got to bring that in a way that is, you know, really, you can't find the words, but it's instinctually and intuitively there. And I knew, you know, early days, as a young artist and as a, you know, that I used to love drawing and I used to love communicating in a visual sense, that I felt like that was innate in who I was. And then when you put, you know, beautiful words and beautiful packaging and beautiful ways to communicate, you know, that becomes the holding environment for which you can build something powerful around. And, you know, I always struggled with this idea that I was given permission to reach out and go big. And A Healthy Child was a, you know, it was started off the unfortunate situation of two parents losing their daughter and their daughter contracting a Wilms tumor, which is a form of cancer that is directly linked to an extreme pesticide exposure. And so I, whilst being, you know, so immediate in my focus around family and small groups and inspiring people in the here and now, that organization was powerful in the sense that it was pulling all this academic and research and science and data from tremendously credible resources. And a lot of it is white paper and heavy and hard to understand. And they said, no, we need to take that data and we need to do more with it. We need to pull it together and we need to articulate that in a beautiful, accessible, concise, aspirational, and inspirational way. And I thought that that was a fascinating charter and mission. Not only can we, but we must, as part of our purposeful intent, we must change lives. We must prevent disease and illness. We must take that precautionary approach to make sure that this never happens again, or that that company will, we're going to pressure them so hard with so much might that they must change their formulations. And so at Healthy Child, Healthy World, which we eventually landed on that name, and I worked with a tremendous, you know, we can go down a whole story of working with a tremendous branding group named Cronin out of the Bay Area. We pulled together a platform of content and visuals that was really, really a provocateur in the marketplace. And highlighting that, you know, it was casting the shadow and then shining the light on the good brands. And ultimately, I just kept hearing a plea, a demand, a request for partnership from parents as we connected with them. And they just said, the request was, tell me what to buy. Please, you've alerted me, you've alarmed me, you've scared me, you've done all the things. Now just tell me what to buy, because now I know that there are certain chemicals or there are certain questionable ingredients in my personal care products or in my mattress or in my infant formula or in my spray cleaner or all these products that I'm choosing to bring into my home. Again, this is early 2000s. That world of natural, safe, non-toxic wasn't, there were some pioneer brands, but it wasn't as dial tone and as, you know, the clean movement hadn't even started. It was really, you know, seen as green. So the work that we did there, and I wrote a book called, you know, Name the Same Name, Healthy Child, Healthy World, Creating a Cleaner, Greener, Safer Home. That was one of the first manuals. It was a place for parents to really look to as credible resourcing, as well as notable voices. And so we had everyone from, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow prior to her launching Goop to, you know, Tom Hanks and some really illustrious, notable voice. Michelle Obama was in the book prior to President Obama even declaring his candidacy. So we had notable voices to popularize and say, hey, this is happening. Both, you know, science can tell you, both real-time anecdotal feedback and stories from families and notables that you may have heard of will tell you that, but we must make a change. And you can make a change. And it's, you can't do everything, but you can do something. And let's make those changes that are you're empowered to do.
Yeah, that's amazing. I know that book seems to have done pretty well, like a lot of readers, a lot of great reviews and so on and so forth. And I imagine to some degree, launching that book and especially maybe even the notable people you had kind of quoted or speaking through that book, you know, not only gave some credibility to that book, but also helped spread that book. And then I'm also wondering, you can tell me if I'm wrong or not, but I imagine like writing that book, the process of writing it, the process of publishing it, talking about it, putting it out into the world, also probably opened some doors and or started you on some other paths. And I noticed that you published that book, I think in 2008, and then a few years later is when Honest Co. was founded. So I'm almost wondering if that was kind of yet another on your path towards Honest.
Yes, they're remarkably inextricably linked, especially with that book, because at that book launch party, April 18th, 2008, People magazine was throwing that party because they said, oh my God, you have all these great people, doctors, notables. We want to throw you a party.
Wow.
Right? So it's like,
you're like, okay, I can't say no to that.
And so they threw this really beautiful party at this small little restaurant in the east side of LA. And, you know, everyone came to celebrate and it was lovely. But People magazine said, we're going to invite some people too. And I said, great, that would be awesome. Thank you so much. And so they invited Jessica Alba, and Jessica Alba happened to be, you know, almost nine months pregnant. So on a very final tail end of her first pregnancy. And she said, I just got the galleys and I got your book. And oh my God, this is amazing. Please tell me what to buy. Can you help me guide me? I'm like, yeah, let's stay in touch. And so we stayed in touch, and she was very excited about organic clothing, and we steered and honed, and I was working nights and weekends on this project. And ultimately this project and our collision and our initial meeting and, you know, some back and forth eventually ended up to landing us together to work in earnest on the Honest Project that eventually became the Honest Company. And the Honest Company launched in 2012. I mean, there was a lot of buildup and fits and spurts and stops and challenging dark times. You know, any entrepreneur will know and any founder will know. But when you finally, in architecting that brand, there was so much intentionality and so much love and so much real rigor when it came to the formulations and building out not one product, but 17 products at launch. So three different categories. And many, many investors came to us and said, what's your MVP, your minimally viable product? Tell me what you're launching with. Well, you have 17. I said, no, slow down. The brand is the product. The brand is the most important thing. It is a trusted platform. As soon as someone comes in, they are outsourcing their trust to us. We've done the hard work and the heavy lifting and all of the deep, deep intentionality around safety and purity. They will come and they will shop and they will buy everything from that beautifully designed diaper to that laundry detergent, to that spray cleaner, to that personal care and lotions and balms and everything you would put on your baby. So, and that thesis luckily worked. We brought a couple other co-founders in, namely on the operation side, on the subscription commerce side. And it was a phenomenal ride in the sense that it really, from a business perspective, it was a hybrid business because it was very much a technology play in the sense that we were doing a lot of subscription commerce. And this is prior to even Amazon Subscribe and Save. Subscribe and Save didn't even exist when we launched. And so they were, you know, you prove the model through a direct to consumer fashion, but then as also a physical, obviously a very much a physical products company and a consumer products company at its heart. And we were building beautiful things and we had to do it in an efficacious and in a really a remarkable way. And so that performance driven mindset on both sides of the business really allowed it to be a very much a holistic platform and really disrupt the marketplace, gosh, in so many ways. I mean, oftentimes we would say, and people would scratch their head in board meetings, but I would say particularly, I would say, you know, if someone copies us, that's a good thing. And they were like, wait, why is that possibly a good thing? I said, no, that because we're shifting the market. We are, and a lot of that advocacy and that orientation around giving and caretaking and being a beacon of hope and safety and partnership with a parent, especially a parent, that came from my days at Healthy Child, Healthy World. And that came from that level of mission orientation. And so Honest being, you know, there are a few others, but Honest was very much a, you know, a lot of this stuff is dial tone today, but Honest was very much a early brand when it came to mission orientation. And we often said we are on a mission and we are going to provoke the marketplace and we are going to have them have all boats rise in a rising tide because we need to change. There are too many sick children. There are too many confused parents. There are too many products in market that have known carcinogens. One of the most important products that we were going up against was a No More Tears shampoo. And I won't say their name, but everyone would know that, you know, that category. And that had 5 known carcinogens at the time of launch. 5 known carcinogens, class 1 carcinogens at the time of Honest's launch. And so that's just unacceptable as a father of 4 now, but at the time we launched, I had 2. That's just unacceptable to have anything that would cause harm to my baby. And I could buy it at the stores of Walmart and Target, but that doesn't mean it should be there, and someone needs to be a guardian at the gate.
Right. Yeah, I think that's part of why I do what I do too, supporting impact-driven brands, is because everyone's got a lot of stuff on their plate, right? They're worried about mortgages, bills, feeding their kids, all the news about whether or not to eat organic or which things to eat organic, and how they're plugging into society, or, you know, politics coming up, whatever. So there's just so much that they have to do, right? And if we can make it easier on them to make the right choices by curating the better choices, like putting better products on the shelf instead of them having to read science documents and research studies and all that to even figure out if this product that's on the shelf that should be safe, to figure out if that product is actually safe for them and their family. That's just ridiculous, right? And I feel like building better for the world brands is all about just making better options easier, because everyone's got so much stuff going on. They don't have time to do the work. So we do the work for them and provide them better options. So I love that that's kind of one of the founding principles behind Honest. And a lot of the work you do is just making it easy for people to make the right choice, which is super important, right?
It's super important. And the marketplace is a powerful platform to shift cultural norms. And it's not always about buying, and you always can't buy yourself out of a problem. And you expect there to be some type of regulatory or legislative or some type of NGO organization that does the work. But the marketplace and our, you know, we live in a capitalistic society in the sense that the market, we're in a free market economy that needs to drive innovation. In my opinion, it needs to drive purpose, and the purpose for better, safer, like better for the planet, better for the world, better for the future, because the eyes of the future are looking back at us. And what have you, you know, from a legacy perspective, I'm both haunted and inspired every single day. You know, my children will look back and say, "Dad, what did you know and what did you do? And how was that action on my behalf or on the behalf of seven generations going forward?" And so I am uniquely fired up to, you know, whenever I touch and create, again, as a creator and as an artist and as someone who feels like it's deep in both our capability and within our range to shift the market in order to create positive solutions. It's such a gift, as well as it keeps me up at night, because we needed to be doing more, especially now more than ever.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And you mentioned how Honest Co. was kind of early to the market in lots of different ways, from the subscriptions to the better products with more integrity, better company values, and so on and so forth. And I also just really love what you were saying too about the brand is the product, and that if you build a brand people trust, they'll, you know, buy whatever products you put out. So early in lots of those ways, and it's very apparent that your kind of business slash brand instincts have driven you and played a big part in your roles in these companies. But one of the other ways that Honest Co. was kind of early was in the kind of celebrity brand type space too, by which I mean it's pretty popular these days for celebrities to diversify their portfolio and invest in a lot of companies and maybe endorse companies. But this one's a bit different in that it feels like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels like Jessica wasn't there as like an endorser or investor, but really a key part of the team and really helping play her role. So I'm just curious. I know obviously you coming from this business and brand kind of architect background and really driving these values, how did you two work together? Because I know as somebody who's had partners in a business that it helps to divide and conquer. So like, what were you controlling? What were you able to not have to worry about because she was managing it?
Yeah, I mean, look, she, and it's true, you're absolutely right to pull that out and make a note on that. Jessica wasn't just an ambassador or a, you know, an accessible face. She was a builder. She was, her hands were, you know, her sleeves were rolled up and her hands were in it. And she very much cared incredibly deeply. She was our target consumer. And so oftentimes she, you know, she was the target consumer in the sense that she was multicultural and had young kids and cared a lot and was demanding a lot of the market, and was a very thoughtful consumer in the sense that she was seeking better for you options in the market. I do have to say, you know, we joked, my job was back of the label and her job was the front of the label. I love the details around ingredients and formulations and positioning copy and really having the product be this performance-driven, efficacious tool, if you will. That's what, you know, that's what we invite these things in and intimate places and intimate times of our lives. And they need to serve us a very direct functional role. And Jessica also was, you know, she's got an exquisite eye when it comes to what's beautiful, what's going to excite and incite, especially a mom. Women drive so much, you know, trillions of dollars of the marketplace, particularly new moms. There's more data that would show you that a new mom or a mom in general can shift markets just by her purchase behavior, because she's attracted to and shifts on behalf of her family, not on behalf of her own self. And so she's thinking about others and that scaling up and taking care of parents and scaling down and taking care of her own children. She's got a ton of leverage and range. And so that gets, you know, she is incredibly instinctual, and she's also, she can deliver, you know, you talk about product, you talk about ethos, you talk about brand vision. She can deliver when it comes to those very important media moments as well, right? And so Jessica was and is, and just most recently stepped down as her chief creative officer role as an active person in that brand. She's very much attuned to the board still as we speak, but the brand very much was a different type of relationship than a lot of the brands that you see as, oh, founded by X notable, right? And that's fine. And that's great. Sometimes you question it, and you should probably do that. You should question it for a reason. But she was there nights and weekends, early days, saddle up alongside me.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like I said, there's so many more celebrity brands these days. And as far as I can tell, 90% of them are like, they write some checks and maybe show up to some board meetings and press releases or media conferences or something, but they're not helping decide what the company makes or sitting there like in regular staff meetings or whatever, trying to
not really, across not the typically. Line. If any of them would like to start that early, they could reach out to me.
Yeah, exactly. And then you also mentioned that she's stepping back from day-to-day operations, a pretty recent announcement. I haven't seen any announcements on your end about stepping back. So how do you see your role continuing on, or maybe even how do you see your role shifting with her stepping back?
No, so I took a step back in 19 and 20 in a more intentional way, particularly around engagement with the brand. You know, we've got some tremendous leadership in Carla and team. You know, in the past it was Nick, but I've decided that I love those early days of a brand, anywhere between negative 12 to 15 months ideation and really a crystallized, excitable moment that's set and that patter in the heart that says, gosh, I need to build something here. I need to do something here. Or again, it's my responsibility. So the first 5 years of a brand, I love that early phase and early stage and that creation phase. There are plenty of great people that love scaling brands. That's not my superpower. I'd rather start and create an idea and build that first 5 years. So in the past, most recently, I did that work over in the therapeutic botanical side, really leveraging some hero molecules that needed a lot of education and a lot of science and a lot of credibility work. So I did that in the space of cannabinoid sciences and did it with a brand that I brought again from that initial phase to, and in this case, sale. And the brand was called Prima. And that was a phenomenal ride with two other female co-founders. That was, you know, really, really a great brand that, again, provoked that marketplace, but also created a platform of credibility and trust in that, on a market that there wasn't that a lot of credibility in that space. And so Prima was very much a driver of significance and integrity, where, you know, it was really wrought with gray market economy past and or just didn't exist at the time. So that was a good run for sure. We certainly can talk about that. But, you know, to take a brand from ideation to sale is exciting and hard. And so it was nice to have an outcome like that.
Right. And I think it sold recently, because I seem to remember I was just like, when we first started having this conversation about having you on the podcast, I don't remember that acquired note on LinkedIn related to Prima. And then when I was checking just recently, I was like, oh, it got acquired. That's cool. So maybe That was, I did plan to talk about that a little bit more too, the Prima. So why don't you talk a little bit about what the core problem was that you were trying to solve with that? I know you mentioned there wasn't a lot of integrity in this space, which is one of the problems, but I also know that there's some other things you were trying to build or trying to relieve in people's lives.
Yeah,
with this business. So talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah. Well, if you would like pull back and see where I'd like to go, I'd like to address the epidemics that we're all facing. And so in children and families, and in particular our health challenges, both positive and negative health outcomes, for honest, it was very much how do we prevent disease and illness? How do we prevent these ingredients from causing cancer, from causing learning disabilities and behavioral delays and challenges physically and emotionally in young children? And a lot of those chemicals and toxicants have been linked to certain disease states and illnesses that, you know, for as far as a father is concerned or a parent is concerned, you know, no child should be put into a state of compromise early. And we know so much science that shows the first 5 years of development is the most vulnerable and the most important. So a pure, safe, non-toxic world is critical. And then for Prima, it was interesting. As I was looking at the market, you know, one of the other epidemics that we're all facing is this extreme or everyday stress realities, that stress is something that is can be chronic and really debilitating. And most people don't think of stress as an urgent need, right? All I can get through my day and stress is not going to harm me. Although so much data and numerous studies will show that 90% of all disease and illness has a link to a stressor or an underlying stressed condition. I mean, now they're even looking at aging as being one of a core component of stress being a component of aging. They're calling it inflammaging. And so this inflammatory response at a cellular level, and when the body is in a state of inflammation and stress, there's no healing that can occur. And so I thought that was fascinating. And I, you know, did extensive research and a lot of the data and medicine that I was looking into and uncovering over the past decade will show you that there are certain molecules and adaptogens and botanicals in certain states that it, when delivered to the body in a bioavailable way, can really minimize and reduce the body's sympathetic and parasympathetic system, this stress response system, otherwise known as the endocannabinoid system. So we have a body system that has more cellular receptors than our entire neural and central nervous system combined. And this system is there to both be excited and to be managed, and it's managing our stress response. And in days of past, you know, 10,000 years ago, that was a very, very important response system. How do we manage our fight and flight response, fight, flight, or flee? And so that is still within our bodies and still within our nature. And so mom passes these native molecules that we make in order to manage this stress response system. But there weren't many brands doing that. And so early entrants in the space were leveraging cannabinoids, otherwise in a very rudimentary fashion, known as CBD. You know, that's one cannabinoid out of a whole host of over 400 others. And so it was shocking to see not much science, not much rigor, not much communication, platforming, and some clinical data that was being assessed and originally studied. And so I thought it would be a really, really fascinating time to build in that space, as well as COVID was the perfect case study in the sense that COVID happened right after the brand launched. And that was one of the most stressful times and certainly in the last 100 years. And so we, you know, as a society, were under extreme stress. And it was very concerning on so many different levels. And so as a brand, we were there to articulate both the urgency and the power of these molecules, as well as helping people understand that they're, you know, you could bring them in into supplement form. You could bring them in topically. They also are remarkable on skin health and skin conditions. And so we were a brand that was, again, similarly like Honest, a holistic platform with depth and breadth across multiple categories that was there to really deliver these active molecules in a way that were both preserved and extracted in a beautiful fashion and efficacious fashion, but also delivered to the site of the body that was most meaningful and impactful at the time. And so it was very much bridging the gap between healthcare and wellness. And it was very much a provocateur in the sense that, you know, you're taking your Advil, you're taking, you know, these Bengay topical muscular things. So, you know, those are numbing out the problem. Let's go to the root and to the source and really address these ailments that we have. And it's a big endeavor to teach the consumer who is now more than ever. And I do have to say, you know, as just a entrepreneur and as a communicator and as a brand leader, it's hard to get through to consumers in the sense that 2 feet in 2 seconds goes by really quickly. They scan, they peruse. If it doesn't excite them visually or communications wise, they're on, they're moving through their day just because there's such a glut of resourcing and so much optionality, both online and offline and in our physical world. And so entrepreneurs really have to do an elegant and exquisite job to articulate in such a powerful, fast fashion the urgency of the problem and the solution. And it's hard. It really is hard. And so whilst, you know, Prima showed up at the halls of and doors of Sephora and Whole Foods and Vitamin Shop and Amazing Food and Drug, like, it still is really hard when consumers are scanning. And so I'm so proud with how that brand turned out. And equal parts, I get excited and activated to think that, you know, someone like a Jessica could have been so powerfully helpful to break through the noise, because ultimately you're breaking through the noise of zeitgeist and social and society norms. And so you realize both the power and the influence of the influential channels and platforms and people. And you also are doing it in a way, in a fashion that you're, and how do you find the right person to bring integrity and trust into a world that is healthcare adjacent? And that continues to be both a remarkable challenge for young brands, but, you know, I experienced that challenge at Prima for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. All very good notes and points about how quickly and clearly you need to communicate to cut through the noise and how that is some of the power. And I think why a lot of there are more celebrity backed brands right now is that even if they're not getting involved from a product creation standpoint or helping bring the brand to life in the day to day, part of their job is to your point, cut through the noise or be a immediate channel to consumers. So I wish they were all focused on using that power for good and pointing people to the better products rather than just selling a bunch of garbage, which some of them are.
But I'm with you. I'm with you. There's so many case studies of people that, like, starting and having a catastrophic and amazing rise and then crashing and burning. I mean, just the recent one in the energy drink space. I mean, just look at it. It's quite well known. And I would say that ultimately, or even just in the water bottle space recently, that you've got to take care of the details. And ultimately, if it's not conscious, is not considered, and not a thoughtful platform, if you're taking advantage of a trend or a small gap in the market, it only can last for so long. But to really create a lasting legacy, it really needs to have a healthful, conscious, and better for you platforming, because otherwise, or better for our world, as you so beautifully articulated, platforming, or else consumers are going to just get, you know, they're going to push you aside when that next gen of a new brand comes along with more consideration, more consciousness, more consistency around a message that is bigger and broader.
Yeah. Speaking of which, you've founded, sold, and invested in quite a few businesses now. So, you know, I'm hearing one of your core measures is the kind of better for you, better for the world kind of attribute of a brand is something that's obviously really important to you. But what other core attributes do you look for in a company, or do you intentionally build into a company to ensure its success?
Yeah, it has to have, I think B Corp is a great rally cry. The B Corp community is a rally cry around social and environmental standards. And I think brands need to have a level of transparent and accountable standards that they articulate to the world. And so both they can hold themselves and their rudders around, like, where are they going and why are they going there? They can hold themselves accountable, but the consumers can hold them accountable too. And you have to be open with that. I would say that founders, I really look for founders that have a unique point of view. And look, I don't have traditionalist business school and pedigree that a lot of brand founders might think they need. And so I look for founders that might have that, but might not. I mean, 9 times out of 10, a founder is uniquely equipped because they have a unique set of circumstances that give them some edge and some range. And I don't necessarily believe that it has to be with, you know, their grad school has to have an MBA title next to it. I really don't. So I look for great founders and I like that are going to, because I know what it takes, and it really takes all of your heart and soul from the center of your heart. And it has to speak right to you in a very obnoxiously wild breath way. You must do it. You have to do it. You're going to do it. You'll do anything possible because it gets hard and it gets tiring. So there's sprints and bursts, but it's a marathon beyond, ultra marathon beyond belief. So I look for great founders. And then I look for consumers that, for like the whole challenge and why, and like, that's, of course, that's standard talk. But I look for consumers that are, I look for very, 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 very small audiences. Like I look for, like, yes, it can be big, and I've done both. But I look for really passionate audiences that have a sympathetic and a compassionate side to their need. Like they see it, they feel it. There's a level of emotionality. I mean, and I look for consumers that are looking for emotion by design. What I mean by that is they're looking for things that are designed for their emotional range and that narrative that speaks to only them. And they're a small, small, small audience. So I like small audiences that care a whole lot, that ultimately you're going to hit the right trend curve, and because they're teachers and they're going to be able to articulate their position more. And then, you know, in coming up in this new stage of my career, I think that one of the most compelling attributes of any great brand that is going to build in habit and consistency and a level of deep loyalty and trust and affinity is a brand that can capture some fun. I mean, I think, you know, there's a seriousness to what you might do and might care about, but if it has to be wrapped in a lightness and a ease. And yes, let me double and triple click in, and you care a whole lot, and you've got philanthropy, and you've got giving, and you've got great social programming, and your company comes alive through a lot of that. But the brand, both the work and the cultural norms that you set for yourself, as well as how that emanates out to the actual physical product and then through your community, that it has to have a level of fun and commitment. And I think fun is a untapped and undervalued need. And, you know, like if you look at a brand like, gosh, let's take a brand that I care a whole lot about. I even just look at the fascinating rise of Erewhon. And Erewhon being a natural marketplace in Los Angeles, small store that started in the 60s that was a very much an activator in natural foods. Then this new founding team bought it and has expanded it beautifully. But there's a level of seriousness and beauty and elegance and and cutting edgeness. And yet there's a veil of fun that surrounds it. Like, hey, we're going to be just enough serious, but just enough cool and fun in our presentation. And I think fun is an X factor. I mean, honest, we built a ton of fun in, and it started from like how we showed up at work and what was on our faces. Was it like a scowl and a focused, or was it like, hey, we can figure this out and let's be positive and enjoy the work together. And so I think you can sense and feel that level of tangible essence in any great brand.
Love that. And it kind of ties back to the mission with Prima too, about relieving some of that chronic stress, right? And one of the best relievers of stress is fun. And everyone's got so much going on. Again, back to what I was saying before, that if we can make better choices easier for them, that's awesome. But if we can also make those better choices enjoyable and entertain them along the way. And I think especially with the rise of social media and these short form videos, like the content that performs the best these days is entertaining, right? So people just have so much going on. They just need a little break from reality. They need a break from life. And if your brand can be part of that, great.
Yeah, it's entertaining, it's real, and it's intimate, right? I think that what you're seeing is this level of relational intimacy. Like, hey, I'm going to just pick up my phone. We're going to talk. And that's, to me, that's not my most native and natural position to do, to communicate that way. But I'm pushing myself into that. And I would encourage entrepreneurs and business people alike to really understand the power of that. I mean, we could Brene and Brown it and Glendon Doyle it all day long. Like, we've got to be vulnerable. We've got to be open. Right. And we've got to say, like, we're not perfect. You know, perfection is, you know, I roll on the side of control enthusiast all day long, but we've got to show our scars. We have to show the underbelly of vulnerability to really connect and humanize to the audience. And I think that there's a unique leverageable power in that vulnerable meets. I just want to have fun. I'm just here in the day, in the now, and I'm going to show you how passionate I am, but I'm going to show you how much I care about it too.
Right. Yeah, I love it. So one more deep question, if you don't mind, and then we'll kind of work towards wrapping up. But what do you feel like is the most surprising and or difficult challenge you've faced in your decades of entrepreneurship so far?
I think the world of mental health and founders or early stage entrepreneurs, and I think that's under discussed right now. It's a very, very lonely experience. I saw a great quote from Howard Schultz, and he talks about this idea that the more you rise and the more successful you get, the thinner the air becomes.
Yeah.
So that's a great analogy and a visualization around you need to be on your game, and you need to take care of yourself, and you need to take care of your body, and you need to take care of your relationships, and you need to take care of your mindset and how you speak to yourself. And you need to do the work necessary to have the emotional hygiene for your people, but mostly for yourself. And that takes work, and it's part of the work. And I've seen many founders disregard the power and the responsibility there, and they're not fun to work with. And teams sloughing over, and products start slumping. And like, you've got to do, you know, as we all hear and talk about, you got to do the work and you got to do your work. And I would say that it's just a call out and a nod to founders out there, because as they say, it's lonely at the top. And it's not only the top, it's not the place where you are, but it can be lonely when you don't know who to turn to. And like, bless the spouses and bless the, like, the good friends who, you know, those founders can lean upon and those partners in their lives. And so, you know, curate and cultivate those relationships, those friendships, those partnerships, and those places where you can build that level of your own personal board, if you will, to have some support along the process.
Yeah, I love that note. Yeah, it's something I've appreciated about LinkedIn community recently is that there's been a lot more of those conversations around entrepreneurship, leadership, founders, et cetera, who deal with it all. Like, we wear all the hats, we carry all the weight. And to your point, it's not like you've got like a boss to go to and get emotional or support or resources, more resources or something like that to continue on in your journey. So that's where it feels lonely. But I, to your point, like having your own board or your own kind of community of people who get it, and you can be vulnerable with them. You can talk about the challenges and you can offer each other support and resources, even if just to say, hey, you're not alone. We all go through this. It's not something you're doing wrong, or it's not something you're not doing enough of, unless it's taking care of yourself, which often happens when you're putting everything you have into this business, right? But I find that super valuable and important to just have that safe space to let it all out, to kind of swap ideas and to support each other, and maybe even like try to hold each other accountable for taking care of ourselves. Because if you're not taking good care of yourself, how are you supposed to take care of your company or your team or your clients or your customers or whatever else? So I love that you kind of made that note there too. Great. So if you have a few more minutes, we just have a quick rapid round wrap up.
Oh, I love that.
All right. So you can answer these in a little bit of detail if you want, but you know, you can also keep it brief.
Great.
All right. So what brand do you wish you'd invested in or founded?
Gosh, that's a good one. What brand do I wish I invested in and or founded recently? I'm perusing my world right now. That's a good one. I'm usually really so critical. I think Hugh Chocolate did a great job. Organic vegan chocolate. I was like, God, I saw that. Eat chocolate every single day. When I first saw it, I was like, God, that's really smart. I hope they do well. And they did such a great job. So I thought Hugh Chocolate did a fantastic job.
I think I have like 3 or 4 bars of Hugh Chocolate in the cupboard right now. So it's a good choice there. Love it. Okay. What's your favorite way to relieve stress besides Prima, of course?
Thank you. It would be certainly I would say go on a walk with one of my children. The undervalued need to get outdoors, move your body. It doesn't, consistency beats intensity all day long. Get outside every single day, walk, be connected in a natural environment, do it with those you love. The power and the magnitude of how simple that is, but how remarkably de-stressing and connective and nutritive it is, I think people undervalue it all the time.
And I think part of the reason it's undervalued is there's like this big culture of, no, you got to do these crazy intense exercises. You got to be in CrossFit. You got to do this. You got to do that for health. But like what the Blue Zones kind of studies show us is, you know what? Just walking down the road and like bending over, doing some gardening, like it can be pretty light stuff, but it's just about, like you said, consistency. It's about getting up from behind your desk and doing some amount of physical activity every day. That'll get you into your hundreds, but like these CrossFit things and whatever. Yeah, do it if it fires you up, but it's not necessary to do that intense.
It is not necessary. We've been led to believe a whole story around that. It's good marketing. Don't buy into it. Just move your body. Simply walk. Just walk. Do the most natural, native, most powerful thing you can do. Walk.
Walk and maybe play in the soil, garden or something.
There you go. Love it. Get your hands in the soil. Exactly. It's up and down. Bend down to the earth.
Yeah. Okay. So what's the best piece of advice you've received recently?
Gosh, best piece of advice that I've received. It's hard to do. And because I have four kids and I have a busy life, but it's just to read more. I find that my life and my headspace and my end of my day and how it's to, you know, typically I'm like rushing to connect with my wife and pushing the kids down. Like I believe there's 9 most important minutes with your kids every single day. 3 minutes when they first wake up, the 3 minutes after they come home from school, and the 3 minutes before you get to bed. If you can nail those moments as a parent, you're doing well. But I just need to read more in my life. And so I've been really intentional trying to read at least 20 pages a night. Typically, I'm a slow reader, so it typically turns about to be 20 to 30 minutes. And God, I go to bed easier. I wake up with some of that on my mind. I'm reading Rick Rubin's The Creative Act right now, and talk about a powerful read, beautiful, philosophical, deeply, deeply moving. I highly, highly recommend it for your audience. Yeah, but read more.
Yeah, that's great. We'll put a link to your book and Rick Rubin's book in the show notes. Who's an impact-driven leader you admire and why?
You know, I've said this before, but he still becomes the all-time leader for me is Yvon Chouinard from Patagonia. I happened to work with them in the late 90s and early aughts. Obviously, he's done such tremendous work to reconceive how we both function as a business, but also what we choose to create and what's some of the outcomes from the business in some elegant, exquisite product to boot. So I'm such a huge fan of how he's remained committed. I'll use his word, committed to the core, always had a orientation to where he was taking that business and where they were taking. I mean, it's never one person. So I want to give the entire, legacy team of Patagonia a lot of nods. Everyone from Skipper Bro to, gosh, there's so many people there. But anyway, I just think he and that brand have just been a touchstone to the possible. And I commend him for that.
Yeah, that's a great note. Great leader, great business, like in so many different ways. But to touch back on one of the things we talked about a moment ago is that vulnerability. They were one of the first brands I saw being truly vulnerable and saying, like, look, here's our supply chain. We know it's not perfect. We're working on it. There's all these problems. If you got ideas, let us know. Just putting it out there and being real with people, I think was fairly new to the space at that time. And it was a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, and still continues to be a little while some people are showing it, and I feel like there's still such a huge frontier into how is it made? Like, tell me really, how is it made? Where are you sourcing that one fabric and that one thread, and what is its supply chain? And how does it get there? So they've done a great job at showing, oh, it's made in this location, Vietnam, Malaysia, wherever. But I think that there's so much more depth and breadth that could be done there to, just to take advantage of your opening, cracking of that door. But brands do it more. The more you do it, the more you're held accountable to it, but the more love and appreciation and just betterment along that supply chain that will happen. So do the work.
Love it. Okay, final question. Since this podcast is called Brands for a Better World, what does a better world mean to you?
For me, a better world is something that is safe and fair and just and gives people access to the possible for them to be exactly who they need to be and want to be and share with the world to be and really let them. Better means them living their most activated and aligned and truest self. And I love the idea that someone could be, they would feel better if they could be more true to themselves in that internal conversation. I mean, we do things and we make compromises along the way because on behalf of others or situations. And, you know, I wish there could be less compromise and more betterment in how they both appreciated themselves and valued their true range and impact and really giving them the opportunity to live their fullest, most actualized self.
Perfect. Love it. That's a great way to wrap up. So thank you for demonstrating conscious leadership and helping bring some of these Better for the World brands to life and really paving the way for others to do similar things and to follow your lead. And, you know, obviously just also creating great products that people can use to take care of themselves a little better with less work. So I appreciate all that you're doing. And thanks for carving out a little time to come and share the story on this podcast.
It's been my pleasure. And I always leave my email. If anyone ever wants to email me, you always can find me, Christopher Gavigan, just my name, at gmail.com. So reach out anytime. Love to hear from you. And thanks so much, Gage, for the opportunity to be on your platform.
Yeah, thank you. Cheers. Thanks for listening. To learn more about The Honest Company, go to honest.com. For more about Prima, visit prima.co, P-R-I-M-A.co. And for more about Christopher, find him on LinkedIn at Christopher Gavigan. If you like this show, remember to help us grow by liking, reviewing, and sharing. If you're new here, don't forget we have over 100 episodes in the archive. Some might be called Evolve CPG, but it's the same show, so dig in for more goodness. If you consider yourself an impact-driven professional, join me over at impactdriven.community, where we're supporting each other's growth as impact leaders.